Welcome to the Cairns Writes Podcast, home of science fiction, fantasy, and horror author Michael Cairns, me. If you like what you hear today, you can find more at cairnswrites.com and download free sci-fi novella, Childhood Dreams.
In last week's episode, someone messed with Scarlett's Tumblr. She read some bad poetry, made up with Martin, and discovered a plot to end the world. A Change of Status, Episode 2. The entire world? Are you sure? Because, like, if they wanted to wipe out West London, I don't think it'd be that much of a loss, you know, as long as I wasn't still here. Martin shook his head. It doesn't work like that. The grave is a place of great power. Anyone discovering it no longer thinks for themselves. It isn't about destroying a particular place. It's about welcoming the undying back to the world. His coming will destroy everything. Why now? Couldn't they at least wait till after New Year? He smiled. It happens on Christmas Eve, just before the sunrise. I'm sure if they'd known you were bothered, they'd have changed his birthday. She raised an eyebrow. Was that your sash showing? Martin looked sheepish and turned back to his desk, rooting through the debris until he emerged, waving a thin book triumphantly. He leafed through it, found what he wanted, and passed it over to Scarlett. She looked at the page and threw it on the floor, face scrunched up. Ew! Do you really think I want to see that? You're supposed to be like a responsible adult. He looked affronted. That's the undying. Huh? She picked the book up and stared at it. She turned it around, looking at it from a different angle. Nope, still looked the same, still gross. That's really a guy? Martin chuckled. It's the ghost of a person, really. He never had a body. Who was he? He was Jesus' twin. I'm sorry? Martin cleared his throat and Scarlett sighed, leaning back and mentally picturing herself on a beach. Lecture time. When Jesus was born, which did happen, by the way, he had a twin. Only the twin wasn't corporeal. He hurried on, seeing the confusion on her face. He didn't have a physical form. Mary and Joseph had no knowledge of him. If legend is to be believed, he was left in the cowshed, a baby left to fend for itself. He sighed, and she realized he felt sorry for it. Had he been physical, he would have died. But being incorporeal, he needed no sustenance. He grew slowly until he could travel and then went out into the world. She waved a hand. And everywhere he went, he caused great suffering, blah, blah, blah. Am I right? Martin looked surprised. That's exactly right. Until he was trapped. They thought at the time they'd killed him, but he can't be killed. You'd think with a name like the Undying, they'd have figured that out. Martin frowned at the interruption, but nodded anyway. He wasn't called that then. It was only when the grave was disturbed and he almost ended the world that he earned the moniker he now bears. The moniker he now bears. Martin frowned again, and she smiled at him, showing some teeth. He ignored her and rose from his chair, beginning to pace across the room. He got across and back before he seemed to realize there was barely room to swing a cat, and sat back down. This is bad news. World ending? No Christmas? No Christmas pudding? Yeah, I'd say it doesn't sound too good. What I don't understand. He stopped frowning. You said there was a comment with the poem. What was it? She unlocked her phone, the photo springing back up. She zoomed in and read it carefully. On Christmas night, the underworld will rise. Why does it say Christmas night? Isn't it Christmas Eve? Martin nodded. That's very true. Odd. Why would someone send you the poem but give you a warning at the same time? Warning? Well, anyone could have found the grave, but this person is telling us that the threat comes from the underworld. It doesn't narrow it down all that much, but it does help a little. I'm confused also by the pictures. He thumped his leg and she sat up, eyes widening. It was the strongest display of emotion she'd seen from him in, like, ever. So, what, you think whoever posted this stuff is trying to help us? Martin shrugged. I think they must be. Why else tell you what is occurring if not to suggest you should help them in some way? It took her a moment to decipher the sentence, then she shook her head. But why me? I mean, no offense to your teaching and that, but I'm not exactly the best person to help stop the end of the world. He smiled. I'm not sure anyone would feel entirely qualified for that job. He stood and she sat back, looking up at him. He gestured for her to get up and she grumbled. Come on, my apprentice. We will learn nothing more sitting here. It is time we went visiting. Really? But it's cold outside, and dark, and cold. We have 3 days until Christmas Eve, and only 3 pictures and a cryptic comment to help us stop the end of the world. I think we might need a little more information. She stood, wrinkling up her nose. Fine, fine. Where are we going? Well, I thought the underworld would be a good start. Oh, forget it, just kill me now. They donned jackets and stepped out into the estate. They had gone no more than 3 steps when a quiet voice from behind made them both spin around. My master wishes to see you. He was short and thin and looked like a strong wind would blow him down. Between his hands he tossed a knife, almost too quickly for her to see. Watching him made her a little dizzy. Scared, too. She wasn't keen on knives these days. He stepped forward, the long coat he wore scraping across the leaf-strewn concrete. He could have been taller, but his shoulders were hunched, screwed up inside his jacket. Martin stuck his chest out. We have somewhere we need to be. The knife stopped, the point aimed straight at Martin. It wasn't a request, not at all. She felt something sharp slip through the gap between her coat and spun round. The thin man stood behind her, his knife inches from her chest. She screamed and leapt back. Beside her, Martin went from standing to sitting on his butt, without any warning or time for him to respond. The thin man was stood a few feet away, the knife once more moving from hand to hand. You will come with me now. Underground. Why was she surprised? You'd figure if you could afford to hire some crazy knife-wielding freak to collect people for you, you'd live in some fancy penthouse in Chelsea. But oh no, it had to be underground. They were bustled through the chained-up gates on Shepherd's Bush Green and down the wet stone steps. She tried to step over the leaf mulch that clogged the bottom, but there was nowhere else to put her feet. Within moments, her Converse was soaked through. She sighed. The one item of clothing Mum got right, and this was the second pair ruined in 6 months. The thin man was in front of them for a moment, muttering something before he shoved the rickety doors inward, and they swung smoothly open, belying the impression given by the knackered rusty hinges. Then she felt the knife in her back again, and with a whimper, stepped forward into the darkness. Martin nudged her as the lights of the green faded behind them. We've come to the right place. She looked at him, just making out the silhouette of his profile. Huh? This is the underworld. I haven't used this entrance before, but it is all linked. I am intrigued to know who wishes to see us. Intrigued? Is that like frightened, wet and angry? His chuckle got lost in the gloom, before lights appeared before them, and the darkness crept quietly away as they walked closer. Minutes later, the tunnel opened up, and they were in a place that reminded her of the Winter Wonderland in Hyde Park. A corridor of stalls on both sides, lit by hanging bulbs and candles, random lamps and fairy lights. From above, she could hear the snickering of what she thought, or hoped, were bats. The floor was covered in a sort of Hessian mat thing, and every footstep squelched as the water escaped from her shoes. The guide was talking to a man stood at the junction, and Scarlett took a moment to look around. The nearest stool was covered in wooden cabinets, each filled with tiny drawers. She opened one at random and found a dark, pungent-smelling weed that made her eyes water. Are you buying or just trying to steal something? She jumped, shoving the drawer closed. Sorry, just looking. I didn't know what was in there. My bad. She looked up over the cabinets and gasped, mouth dropping open. The owner of the voice, and she assumed the stool, was green and suspiciously warty and was quite possibly a goblin. An actual goblin. He glared at her and she gave him a smile. Are these like spell ingredients? He continued to glare for a moment, then nodded reluctantly. Finest in London. Excellent prices. You need anything? Well... She checked her pockets. She had a few quid and hauled her spellbook out, flicking through it. She had been wanting to try this levitation spell for ages, only Martin didn't have any... Where was it? Oh yeah, Avridroot. Yeah, have you got any Avridroot, please? The goblin nodded knowingly. Fancy having a fly, do you? Popular, this one. Here you go. He leaned over the stall, pulling out one of the drawers, and she took out a small back chunk of spongy root, so dark it was almost black. How much? The goblin looked at what she held, rocked his head back and forth and sniffed.
Say, half a pint.
I'm sorry, half a pint of what? She knew before she asked, but she really wasn't willing to even entertain it. Maybe it was beer. Maybe. Nah, not a chance. The goblin gave her a look.
Blood.
She sighed. Always with the gross, always. Look, I've got like £3.50. Will that do? Another look. Then he stuck his hand out and she dropped the coins in. She couldn't help noticing the long, ragged fingernails and browny red stuff stuck beneath them. With a shudder, she thanked him and stuffed the root into one pocket before the thin man appeared beside her.
No time for shopping.
Oh, but time for you to have a natter, right? That earned her a glare, and she noticed the knife was out again, back and forth, back and forth. He motioned with his head and they set out, moving slower now as they wound their way through the shoppers. The market was busy, and it wasn't just the sellers who were weird. They passed all sorts, from more goblins to tiny creatures travelling in groups on these sorts of trolley things that got them up to the right height, to people who looked like trees towering above the stalls. They were stuck in the press for a moment, and she watched one of the tree guys bend over, his head coming in close to the stall. His voice was deep and growling, and she shook her head in wonder as he chatted about the weather to the woman behind the counter. The woman was as wide as Scarlet was tall, and it took her longer than it should to spot the third eye nestled amongst wispy hair on her forehead. They moved on, Scarlet staring in every direction at once, her fear momentarily displaced by the wonders they were passing. Martin nudged her again. This stall on the left. Anything look familiar? She paused, eyes lighting up as she saw hundreds of necklaces draped over cushions covered in velvet, and noticed that many of the chains supported pieces of bone or miniature demon charms, or even teeth.
Yeah.
Martin had moved ahead, tapping the thin man on the shoulder, and the two of them began talking. Scarlet stared at the necklaces, trying to check them one at a time until a cough made her glance up. The man who ran the stall was disappointingly normal, but he was holding a necklace up, the faintest of smiles on his face. She stared at it, making sure. It was the right one.
How did you know?
His smile widened. It is my job to know. She waited for something more, but that was it, apparently. End of explanation. There was something refreshing about the simplicity of it. Bit creepy, too. How much is it? The man rocked his head to one side, far further than normal, and smiled. What is your name? It came naturally this time. Joanna Slater, how about you? Call me Howard for now. Well, Joanna, there is nothing I need right now, but how about if I needed something in the future? Perhaps I could call on you? Her skin was crawling, something about the way he was looking at her, like her cat stared at his dinner. It sounded like a deal, but that was like believing when a teacher told you the lesson was going to be fun. She glanced back and saw Martin and the thin man finish their discussion, both turning to look at her. Yeah, sure, fine, whatever. Sounds like a deal. The smile stayed fixed as he passed her the necklace, and as it touched her hand, it hissed, like her skin was hot and the chain freezing. She held it up, staring at it as it spun slowly before her eyes. She slipped it over her head, and as the jewel touched the skin of her chest, voices leapt into her mind. We are nearly there. Soon we shall have him. Be not too eager, acolyte. There is work to be done still. Does anyone want a cup of tea? She needs to be found, this Slater girl, before she discovers the charms of undoing. But what will we do when we find her? What will we do? We will kill her, of course.
Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard, you can find more at cairnsrights.com and come back in a week for the next episode. You can also find me on Pinterest, Facebook, Goodreads, and Twitter, or email me at michael@cairnsrights.com.